This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, July 6, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in New York. We start with this. Trevor Bauer's seven-day administrative leave by Major League Baseball ends on Friday, but Dodgers manager Dave Roberts told reporters yesterday he doesn't expect the starting pitcher to return then. His quote to reporters, "I don't see it happening." Now, what I learned over the weekend is that Major League Baseball intends to speak with the woman who got the restraining order against Trevor Bauer. They are looking into Bauer's history, as they do in cases like this, to see if there's some other information that would be useful to them as they move forward. They would like to talk to Trevor Bauer directly, but keep in mind, he's under criminal investigation by Pasadena. So anything that he says to Major League Baseball would be subject to subpoena. So it seems unlikely that conversation would take place. And if you look at the history of players in similar situations under investigation, that seven-day administrative leave often becomes indefinite. And that may be what happens here, as Dave Roberts speculated yesterday. Shohei Ohtani was among the starting pitchers picked by the American League staff for the July 13th showcase at Coors Field. He, of course, also will start as designated hitter. Yesterday, Joe Maddon, the manager of the Angels, said that he had a conversation with Kevin Cash, the manager of the Rays, who indicates that Ohtani will hit and pitch in the All-Star game. Last night, Ohtani and the Angels faced the Red Sox, and Rafael Devers had a big night.
3-0 to Devers, the pitch. Swing and a high fly ball into center field. Did he get enough of it? He thinks he did. Back at the wall, gone! Rafi was posing. That normally means good things, and it does here. A two-run big fly. Green light, 3-0, and it's 4-1 Red Sox.
Boy, you nailed that one, Will.
Yeah, that sound from WEEI. Shohei Ohtani yesterday celebrated a birthday with friends.
Well, it is still his birthday. Yeah, so they're singing happy birthday.
Incredible. Awesome. All right, well, listen, we're going to check in with Joe Maddon right now.
Yeah, growing up on the farm in Vermont, I think the most number of people ever saying happy birthday to me in one spot was like three, as opposed to what Ohtani experienced yesterday was like 40,000 people saying happy birthday for him. Yasmani Grandal, the very important catcher for the Chicago White Sox, suffered what appeared to be a serious calf injury. This is what it sounded like as he batted.
It's a segue. 0-2, check swing. And Yaz, oh boy, Yaz hurt himself on the swing, and that is not good at all.
No, because this one exacerbated, I think, what happened to him before. And boy, if that is a calf or an Achilles, that's a big problem. And he is in tremendous pain.
That was Jason Benetti, Steve Stone on the White Sox television network. We'll find out more information today about exactly what's going on with Grandal, but he fell in a heap after taking that swing. Kyle Schwarber suffered a significant hamstring strain during Friday's game. He was placed on the injured list. He's going to be out a long time. The Nationals faced the Padres last night, and man, Trey Turner's home run in the first inning reverberated.
Trey Turner, welcome back. See you later.
That, of course, Bob Carpenter on the Nationals television networks. Fernando Tatis Jr. put on a show.
2-2 pitch, and Tatis hits it in the air to deep left field. Way back. There to go. Second deck Western medal. His National League leading 27th.
And a 5-4 game here in the fourth.
Yeah, he was hitting home runs. He was also making an incredible defensive plays.
Lined and caught by Fernando. You cannot do it any better than that. Superhuman Fernando Tatis Jr. up into the air.
Don Orsillo on the Padres television network. There are a lot of times, let's face it, in this job, I resort to hyperbole, but Taylor, that play last night by Tatis Jr., Don Orsillo was exactly right in how he described that play. That might have been the play of the year.
Oh my God. He didn't need to sell it like he did. I mean, he was floating in midair, and then he comes down and he's like, no big deal. Like, literally unfazed by it, which is just, a testimony to his ability here. He is incredible to watch.
He is incredible. Now, in spite of Tatis's heroics, the Nationals won that game 7-5. The Marlins announced that starting pitcher Sixto Sanchez will miss the rest of the season after an MRI revealed a small tear in his right shoulder. The highly regarded prospect will have arthroscopic surgery, with the team hoping he'll be ready to return in time for spring training next year. Hey, with shoulder injuries, you just never know. Reds, Royals, and the Reds got a big hit from Eugenio Suarez.
Swung on by Suarez. That ball is out of here and way gone. A three-run jack for Eugenio Suarez.
700 WLW. Reds win 6-2. Meanwhile, the Cubs are going in the other direction.
Got over to third. Kicked off Sogard into shallow left field. One run is in. Here comes Hoskins. He'll score. And the Phillies add a couple more. It's 7-2. Here in the top of the eighth inning. That ball was hit hard, but it is an error charged to Sogard.
Yeah, but that's two insurance runs and big insurance runs.
Yeah, that was Tom McCarthy, John Kruk on the Phillies television network. I read last night, I think it was Matt Gelb who tweeted this out, that Sogard's error led to five runs being scored. It was either five or seven, and then the game ended with Sogard pitching. That's how bad it is for the Cubs right now. They just keep on losing. At the end of the day, their playoff chances is 6.3%. That's got some implications. Tigers third base coach Chip Hale is returning to the University of Arizona to become the school's new baseball coach. Before we get to Tim and Tim Kirchin and to Jessica Mendoza and to Sarah Langs, the 2021 ESPYs returned to ABC with a star-studded event in celebration of this year's greatest achievements in sports. Relive the incredible performances, unbelievable plays, and inspiring moments. Watch the ESPYs, hosted by Anthony Mack, live Saturday, July 10th at 8 p.m. Eastern on ABC, presented by Capital One. And the NBA Finals start tonight. Be sure to follow the Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst wherever you listen to podcasts. He's got an NBA Finals preview coming out today. Windy is going to be all over what should be a very interesting NBA Finals between the Suns and the Bucks.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirchin.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirchin covers baseball for ESPN. Tim, what does that mean?
That I cover baseball for ESPN?
Well, I mean literally. So you're covering baseball for ESPN. So what are you doing in that regard here over the next couple days?
Well, I did two shows on Sunday night, and then yesterday I prepared, and tonight I've got the Mets and the Brewers with Jacob DeGrom hopefully going and no rain in New York. Tomorrow night I have the Dodgers and the Marlins, and then I fly home. I drive home Thursday, and then I fly to the All-Star game on Saturday. I do the celebrity softball game with my son Jeff on Sunday. So I am in the process of trying to figure out what TikTok is and what rappers do, because I don't know anything about any sort of pop culture. So once I clear all my baseball after after Wednesday night, then I have to start to understand how the rest of the world lives and works with other things like singing and stuff like that.
So you're playing in this game?
No, I'm announcing it. I'm the broadcaster. I am. My son is the play-by-play guy, and I'm the color guy for the color analyst for the celebrity softball game.
Wow.
So I have all sorts of Vinny Castilla stories, but when my son looks at me and says, "What's your favorite rap song from somebody?" Boy, am I going to be lost there.
I was going to say it would be easier to play in it.
Yes. Well, at my age, I'm not so sure anymore, but I'm sitting next to my son on to do a game. There's nothing better than that, no matter how unprepared I might be.
Well, the other day, Tim, I got an email from a American League staffer who said, "What is the obsession with the national media about the plight of the Yankees, a team that is over 500 and hasn't had a losing season in almost 30 years?" So I'm taking a cue from that staffer, and I just want to talk about a few other teams at the outset of today's podcast. First, I want to ask you about the Mariners, who are 45-40, and FanGraphs doesn't believe in them, apparently, because their playoff chances as of this morning, 2.7%. Based on how they're playing, Tim, I feel like their chances are better than that.
Yeah, they've been outscored this year, though, Buster, and that's why FanGraphs and other people don't like them, and I totally understand that. But the bottom line is they played way better than most people thought they would, and they deserve a little credit for that. In another uneven season with injuries and call-ups and everything else, I like the future of the Mariners, but I don't see them making the playoffs this year. I'm not going to go that low in the percentage rate. But they're better than I thought. And with those young outfielders on the rise, maybe even next year, they're going to be a much better team. I just don't see them ending their playoff drought this year.
The Indians, a brutal loss last night against the Rays. Cleveland is 42-40. What are you seeing in Cleveland?
Well, they've lost seven games in a row. They are not a good offensive team. I think it's a miracle they're still over 500 with the injuries they've had, including to Shane Bieber. I don't know how they're over 500 with the offense that they have. Another tribute to Tito Francona to keeping this team together. But that's a better division than we thought it was going to be in a way. I don't see the Indians making the playoffs. But to be competitive this late with all the injuries, pretty impressive in my mind.
The Blue Jays, a team, Tim, that if I were to, you know, to buy stock in a team for the second half, I think it would be the Blue Jays. 43-39. They have George Springer back. According to FanGraphs, their chances for making the playoffs at 44.4%. And I'll talk in a little bit about how there's some conditions developing that'll probably help the Blue Jays augment before the trade deadline. What do you see in Toronto?
I love their offense, and with Springer back, they are a devastating offensive team when they're going right, and they can beat you in a lot of different ways. They don't just hit the ball out of the ballpark. Their pitching is still questionable to me. Hyunjin Ryu is really good, but after him, we're not positive exactly what they're going to get. Their bullpen has been pretty shaky at times this year, but I'm giving them a 50% chance to make the playoffs, but it's not going to be easy given the Red Sox, the Rays are in their division, and the Astros and the A's are pretty good too. They're running out of playoff teams.
And let's talk about the Brewers, who have separated themselves from the field in the National League Central. I got to say, you know, while we are rightly focusing on the National League West teams as being perhaps the best in baseball, the Brewers, to me, are the team that no one's going to want to face in the postseason.
I looked at their top three pitchers the other day, Buster, and it's ridiculous how good those three were. This is from a couple days ago. They had a 2.13 ERA, that big three, and averaged 12 strikeouts per nine innings. Who wants to see Burns, Woodruff, and Peralta in any short series, any seven-game series? The difference is the Brewers are hitting 220 as a team. That's that's only the Mariners have a lower team batting average than the Brewers. And normally you would say, well, you can't make the playoffs that way. But last year, the Reds made the playoffs with a 212 batting average. The Cubs made the playoffs with a 220, and the Brewers made it at 223. Meaning, I look at their offense, I don't know how they score enough runs to win, but they found a way. They won 11 games in a row and outscored their opponents 84-28. Their starting pitching is great. They have two guys at the end of that bullpen that nobody can hit. So you got to give them a real good chance to win and win the division. They're going to win that division. And Willy Adames, since they showed up, they're like 30-12. It's amazing how well he's played.
And again, I think there are conditions that are going to be really favorable for the Brewers as a contender to add before the trade deadline. I'm going to get to that in just a second. But I am going to talk about the Yankees because they're one of the baseball superpowers in terms of where their payroll is. And they are the train wreck right now that we can't take our eyes off of. Tim, I was there on Sunday and watched Gerrit Cole and Aroldis Chapman blow the multiple leads in that first game of the doubleheader against the Mets. I tell you what, they've got a lot of issues, but you start with this. The two most important pitchers on their staff, you look at them and you say, boy, you know, since the crackdown on the foreign substances, Gerrit Cole and Aroldis Chapman have not been the same. Gerrit Cole, I can't remember who first mentioned this, but I'll and if I could remember, I would give credit. Gerrit Cole in his last two starts has allowed more runs than Jacob deGrom has allowed the entire year. And Aroldis Chapman, his first 23 innings this season, he allowed one run, Tim. In his last 5 2/3 innings, he's allowed 14 runs. And as we sit here today, if you're Brian Cashman, if you're Aaron Boone, if you're Hal Steinbrenner, you have no idea what you're going to get out of these two guys.
Right. And that's why the Yankees are in big trouble right now. They can't make the playoffs without Gerrit Cole being dominant the rest of the way. They can't make the playoffs without that bullpen being at its very best. Now Zach Britton's back on the DL, and as you said, Chapman hasn't been good. He's really struggled for the last 2 weeks. So what are they going to do? I asked a talent evaluator what he would do with the Yankees if he were in charge. He said, well, I'd put Stanton in the outfield and say, I don't care if you can play there defensively, you're playing every day in left field. He said I'd move Luke Voit to DH. I'd move LeMahieu to first. I'd take Torres and move him to second. I'd take Tyler Wade, who has since been sent to the minor leagues, put him at shortstop or trade for a shortstop. That's what he would do with the everyday lineup to try to shake things up, because an enormous shakeup is necessary. Otherwise, they're simply not going to make the playoffs, period. And that 500 streak, Buster, the reason we bring that up is that is the second longest streak in Major League history of consecutive years 500 or better. The other one, of course, is from the Yankees, which is way longer than this one. And the next longest is by the Orioles, like 17 years in a row. Wow. That's why it's important that we look at this, because the Yankees have a streak going now that's only been topped in Major League history by the great Yankee teams of the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. That's what we're talking about here.
I wish I had known that statistic when I wrote the column that posted this morning on ESPN.com about the decision coming up for Hal Steinbrenner, especially if the Yankees, you know, sink into the abyss and don't make the playoffs and their struggles continue. And by the way, according to Fangraphs, the Yankees' chances to make the playoffs are still okay, 38.2%. It's not something that they're not capable of overcoming. So what I wrote, Tim, was that at the end of this year, Hal Steinbrenner, you know, people have asked about Aaron Boone, and I've been saying that that's not the pertinent question. The pertinent question is what Hal Steinbrenner feels about Brian Cashman. And I imagined him, as I wrote the column, sitting down at a kitchen table with a legal pad, you know, drawing a line down the middle of it and doing the pros and cons. On the cons, without a doubt, the fact that in the last 4 years, when it looked like it was going to be the window for this team to win a championship, it hasn't happened. The Yankees now haven't won a World Series in 12 years, which in Yankee years is like, 85 for a small market franchise. It's a long time since they've last won a World Series. And on the list of cons, I mentioned that you could reasonably make an argument that coming into this year, that the Yankees running out basically the same group of players they've had the last 4 years could have expected success. The last 4 years, Tim, they've led the majors in runs scored. So not only have they underperformed based on the standard of the last 4 years, but they have badly underperformed. Like, they're in the bottom 10 as opposed to being, say, like 7th or 8th, and they'd be in a much better position with that. Cashman is also someone who Hal Steinbrenner knows well, and he trusts, and he knows that when Brian makes decisions, he's got the interest of the Yankees at heart, which is the reason why George Steinbrenner trusted Gene Michael, because he knew that it wasn't going to be political. It was going to be what's best for the Yankees today. And here's the other factor too, Tim. If in the back of your mind on Hal Steinbrenner, if at the end of this year you decide to let Brian Cashman go, he's got a year left on his contract. You'd have to pay him $6 million for next year to, you know, go watch his son play baseball in his last year of high school. But also, if they let Brian Cashman go, Tim, he's going to have a job within 0.2 seconds. Like, he's really highly regarded in this sport. And the more that I thought about it, and I actually didn't write this in the piece, I think there's an easy decision for Hal at the end of the year, which is to say, you know what? I'm going to give Brian another year, and I'm going to give Aaron Boone another year at the end of 2022. If we still have the same problems and they try to remake it and it doesn't happen, then I'm moving on. I think that's an easy default position for Hal. What do you think?
And I think he'll take that default, because I'm with Hal Steinbrenner on this. He put it all on the players the other day, and it should be all on the players, Buster. All right, you can argue this team is not well constructed, too many swing and miss guys. I get it, but then what happened 4 years ago and last year and in the last 4 years? Just like you said, it's been a devastating offensive team that has taken an enormous drop this year. So who else to blame but the players for just not performing? And that's why I think Aaron Boone will get another year. I think Brian Cashman will get another year, and I think they should. And then if it doesn't work, you're right, I think they move on after that. But, you know, it's the players that got to start to swing the bats on this team and pitch a whole lot better. That's the trouble the Yankees are in.
So I want to ask you about what a situation developing in the National League standings. When I was looking at FanGraphs today, I noticed this, and it's like, wow. Okay. It looks like that basically the wild card is going to be inaccessible to teams outside the National League West, because the Dodgers, the Padres, and Giants have really separated themselves. I think the Reds might be the closest, at like 6.5 games behind the Padres, which, you know, is an enormous gap at this stage in the season. And so when you look at that, and it was actually a follower on Twitter, JT at JTS1207, who pointed this out. Like, this is absolutely going to shape the trade market coming up, because if you are one of the teams outside of the National League West in the National League, Tim, it's going to be easy to say, nope, we don't have we're not going to make the playoffs. We're going to move on. Let me give you the playoff odds on these other teams in the National League. The Cubs, 6.3%. The Cardinals, even though Matt Carpenter last night was talking bravely about getting back into the race, Cardinals, 2.4%. The Braves, 13.9%. The Reds, 19.3%. The Nationals, who played better the last 6 weeks, 5.3%. The Phillies, 11.3%. Look, you would agree with me that all these teams are capable of making a run and taking a charge at some point. But if we get to say July 26th, and this is where these teams stand with their odds, you know how front offices work. They're like card players. They're going to look at the hand they have in front of them. They're going to look at the playoff odds. There could be a ton of sellers in the National League, especially with the three National League West teams running away with the wild card, as well as that division. The Brewers separating themselves in the Central.
Yeah, Buster, you can make a pretty valid case that four playoff teams are already set in the National League. That's how good the Brewers have been and how weak the NL Central has been. So if you give the Brewers the division, never a good idea to give anybody anything. Those three National League West teams are making the playoffs. There's no doubt in my mind about that. So now you have one playoff spot left, and it's going to come from the National League East. And yes, it's a crapshoot there. And yes, the Nationals could overtake the Mets. I'm not sure how. The Braves could do the same thing. I'm not sure how with the way they played overall, but I'm with you. That National League is going to be we can't make the playoffs this year with only five teams. So why would we add? Instead, let's get somebody for somebody now and rebuild for 2022.
And let me give you an example, a specific example of how this could manifest, this buyer's market developing. The Mets, as we sit here today, I know they're actively out in the market looking at starting pitching, like someone like a Kyle Gibson. They also probably could use a third baseman. Well, you know what? You don't have to be aggressive. You can wait for the market to come to you because there could be multiple third basemen out there. The Cubs, you know, of all these players to sell, for example, there are not a lot of teams out there looking for third basemen. So it might be by the time we get to, say, July 25th, the Cubs are calling the Mets and say, look, what do you give us for Chris Bryant? Because you're like only one of two teams that might be able to, you know, make a deal for him. There are going to be a lot of players like that from all these teams looking to sell. And if you're the Mets or if you're the Blue Jays or, you're another contender who's looking to upgrade there, it looks like they're going to be tremendous opportunities.
Right. As we know, the Cubs have lost 10 games in a row since they pitched a no-hitter against the Dodgers. And Chris Bryant's having a very good year, and he's an incredibly valuable player because he can play the outfield and the infield. He's a great base runner, and he's played in big games for most of his career. Can you imagine Chris Bryant joining the Mets, who desperately need another hitter? Can you imagine the Blue Jays adding Chris Bryant to play third base? Then they could take Kevin Biggio and move him all over the place. I mean, those are two teams that could really be upgraded. And this is where the Cubs have to make a very difficult decision. But maybe their decision's gotten a little bit easier by losing 10 games in a row and falling this far behind the Brewers, who, we repeat, have really good starting pitching. It's going to be tough to run them down.
And I said last week, I think that Craig Kimbrel and the Red Sox, that's potentially a great fit as they have these conversations. Last one before you go, Albert Pujols, 6,000 total bases after last night. When I saw that number, Tim, my reaction was, holy crap. What about you?
Yeah, I think we've lost track a little bit, Buster, with all of the Albert Pujols slump numbers the last few years, exactly what the depth of his career really means. He's still got a shot to hit 700 homers and have over 3,000 hits, which he's already there. We can't forget all these, you know, RBI totals, MVP totals, greatest first baseman ever, perhaps other than Lou Gehrig, you know, top five right-handed hitters ever. That's how you end up with 6,000 total bases like that. It's absurd. I mean, you know, Hank Aaron, a few others, that's what we're talking about here. I just hope people don't remember Albert Pujols as a slow-footed first baseman. We should remember him as one of the most devastating hitters and players that we've ever covered.
All right, Tim. Thanks for doing this. Always love talking with you.
Okay. Thanks, Buster.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter and producer for MLB.com, but above all else, Sarah Langs, a baseball fan, which is why, Sarah, I got to hear your reaction to Fernando Tatis Jr.'s catch last night.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that was just incredible. You know, I know that people point out he's made a bunch of errors this year, certainly kind of like 2 years ago, but this is why he's such an electric player. No matter what the metrics say or anything else, because he can do that. And we've talked about, I feel like, a lot, I mean, since he got to the majors, how unique his body type is for his position. And I think you see that on display here and why that is such a help to him, because he's kind of like a basketball player almost, the fact that he can jump up like that. And there are plenty of shortstops who are great defensive shortstops in the game today who are not built like that, who just could not do something like that.
Yeah, it was amazing to watch. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 116. So speaking of Fernando Tatis Jr., he also crushed this home run last night at 116 miles an hour off the bat. That's the hardest hit batted ball of his career. I know his career is still pretty young right now, but anything, not just a home run, that is the hardest he has hit a baseball the entire time he's been in the majors. He now has 27 home runs in 68 games played, which is three more home runs through that many games than any other player age 22 or younger in his first 68 games of the season. And the only other player age 22 or younger with at least that many home runs in any 68-game span, does not have to be to start a season, was Joe DiMaggio in 1937. So, you know, we're talking about incredible defense, these jumps, everything else. We're comparing him to Joe DiMaggio. I mean, it's just incredible, incredible to watch.
Number two.
Number two is four. So yesterday before the Angels game, Joe Maddon said that the plan is for Shohei Ohtani to both hit and pitch in the All-Star game. We knew that he's the starting DH, but we didn't really know if he was definitively going to pitch. I think we all were hoping that that would happen. And Joe Maddon said he and Kevin Cash are working out what inning Ohtani is going to get. But of course, the moment I see that, I had to think, okay, well, what if he gets a hit? What if he homers and he's also pitching? So there have been four players to get an extra base hit in an All-Star game that they pitched in. Steve Carlton in 1969, Johnny Padres in 1962, Bucky Walters in 1941, and Lon Warnke in 1933. Carlton, Padres, and Walters hit doubles, and Warnke hit a triple. So nobody has hit a home run in an All-Star game that they pitched in yet. And I do feel like if anyone is going to do it, it is absolutely going to be Shohei Ohtani. And the last player to even get any base hit in an All-Star game that they pitched in was Charles Nagy in 1992. And the last plate appearance for a pitcher, I was very curious about all of this, as you can tell, the last plate appearance by a pitcher in an All-Star game was Roy Halladay in 2009. He struck out against Tim Lincecum.
Number one.
Number one is 179. So we have Jacob DeGrom pitching tonight on ESPN against the Brewers. He's thrown 179 pitches at least 100 miles an hour this season. The next most by a starter is 24 by Sandy Alcantara. He's also 17 100-mile-an-hour pitches away of tying 2016 Noah Syndergaard for the most 100-mile-an-hour pitches by a starter in a single season in the pitch tracking era, which is since 2008. And of course, I don't think he'll throw 1700 mile an hour pitches tonight, but he could certainly do that over the next two or three starts, which means he could be breaking that record right around the All-Star break. And that is a season long record.
So Sarah, before you go, I just had a conversation with Tim Kirkchin about what seemed to be the conditions for a great buyer's market developing. Because of how the National League standings are playing out, it looks like you have three teams from the National League West make the playoffs, the Padres, Giants, and Dodgers. The Brewers separating themselves in the National League Central, and the playoff chances for the Cubs, the Cardinals, Braves, Reds, Nationals, Phillies, so low. When I sent out a tweet this morning, there were some fans saying, hey, anything can happen. It's early in the season. And my response was, yeah, I get that. That's a nice emotional feeling about it. But that's not how front offices think these days.
Yeah, I mean, I also think it's not that early anymore. I mean, we're almost at the All-Star break. It's very different than, you know, the Nationals 1931 is always going to be our go-to until the end of time because it's such recent, you know, recency bias, everything else. But that was 1931. That wasn't 82 or 83 games in, which is where most teams are at this point. And if you take a look at the playoff odds on Fangraphs right now, aside from the division leaders and those that entire top three in the NL West, there is no other team in the National League with a 20% chance to make the playoffs other than those top teams. The next highest is the Reds, 19.1%, and the Braves, 14%. Everybody else is lower than that. So, I mean, you know, again, these numbers can change, but it is late enough in the season that it would be pretty miraculous at this point.
No doubt about it. All right, Sarah, I'll talk to you on Thursday.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jessica Mendoza is an analyst for ESPN, which means busy days, Jess. And thank you for getting up early. It's about 7 a.m. where you are, as you and I talk on Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. here in the East Coast. Last night, you had Red Sox and Angels. And tonight, you got Yankees and Mariners. A lot of compelling stories within that group.
A ton of compelling stories. I mean, last night was so much fun because, I mean, you have Shohei Ohtani, which I know everyone, if you're not covering baseball and not watching, whatever, it doesn't matter. I mean, you're talking about him every other day, even if you don't want to talk about him. He's doing something incredible and historic and unbelievable. But to actually see him in Anaheim, you know, completely sold out crowd because the Red Sox are coming into town, you know, best record in the American League and, you know, everything that they bring, every time Shohei Ohtani would step into the batter's box. And of course, he ended up coming up to bat. The Angels rallied in the bottom of the ninth inning. And I mean, just kept getting another guy on. And we just kept saying that you do not want to see Shohei Ohtani. Of course, he comes up with two outs, has a great at bat, lasers a ball in a shallow right field that would have been a base hit without the shallow right field shift that ends up getting him out to end it. But yeah, the stories, the five All-Stars for the Red Sox, you know, to be able to talk about them and Alex Cora, you know, everything that he's done and a difference that he has made in a year on a Red Sox team that was completely non-competitive last year and is now not only leading the East, but all the American League.
How about Rafael Devers? Within that game last night, you know, three more RBI, hitting 290, 21 homers, 71 RBI. I mean, he really is emerging as one of the best hitters in the American League.
Yeah, and, you know, just watching the way he's doing it. I mean, he was pulling the ball, he's going opposite field. But the biggest thing I've seen with Rafael Devers that it really hasn't been talked about a ton is his defense. I mean, you remember, Buster, when we were covering him a couple of years ago and just, you know, the way he looked over there, just the non-agility. You didn't feel like there was a ton of athleticism, and that is something that he took to heart and has worked so hard. Actually, Cora really dove in with him this offseason. In fact, he barely went home to the Dominican, stayed in Florida, worked a ton on his defense and just getting himself into the shape that he could do that, but also like working on all kinds of different things agility wise to be a better defender. He's gone from being in the negatives for defensive run saves to now in the positives, and he's made plays. I remember in the Yankee series, which I'm sure you remember too, I mean, he had a bare hand to play, backhands in the hole, spinning around, perfect throws. So yeah, he's hitting the you know what out of the ball, but it's really the defense that I'm like, this is real.
You know what's really cool about him too, and I love these stories about how players evolve. When he was a younger player, which talking with other Red Sox, they basically said that when he would make defensive mistakes, that would affect his offense. You know, normally you hear when a guy's offense is not going good, how it affects his defense, but he felt so bad about his defensive mistakes that he would take it into his at-bats and it would almost be distracting. And it seems like, you know, based on what I've heard this year, that he's able to move past that now at age 24. I want to ask you in regards to the Red Sox, you know, and I just talked to Tim Kurkjian and Sarah Langs about how it looks like an absolute buyer's market is going to develop. To me, a perfect ad for the Red Sox would be Craig Kimbrell for the back end of their bullpen. Now that the Cubs are going to be sellers, you got Chris Sale coming back already for Boston at some point in the second half. Can you imagine the pitching staff bolstered by not only Sale and Craig Kimbrell?
That's just ridiculous because their bullpen is really good right now. and Matt Barnes is an all-star closer. If they got Craig Kimbrell, which would be amazing, it's also just a ridiculousness of riches to have that many dudes. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, just being able to see between Adam Ottavino and Whitlock and, you know, Barnes, who's just had an incredible year. Then you add Kimbrell, the numbers, in fact, for their bullpen this last month, I know they struggled a little bit early, but it's been one of the best bullpens in baseball, Buster. So to add to that, I mean, but as you know, you get into October and that's what it comes down to is having more and more arms and who you can match up. And wow, to be able to add him, bring him back to Boston would be pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah, I think if they added Sale and Kimbrell and Sale, you know, goes through smoothly without having any setbacks as he comes back from Tommy John surgery, we would look at that team going to the playoffs as being potentially the favorite to advance to the World Series, which would be incredible given where the Red Sox were. All right, in your preparation, what have you learned about the Mariners, who have a better record than the Yankees?
Well, my husband is a huge Mariner fan, so the Mariners are on every single day. And, you know, I think the biggest thing with them is they're doing it with a lot of non-names. I mean, you know, the Kyle Seegers of the world, of course, Jared Kelenic got a ton of attention when he came up. It was sent back down. Now he's tearing it back up in AAA. But for the most part, it's a different guy every night. I mean, they're just kind of piecing together. They're scrappy. You know, they're a fun team to watch. And we got to actually go out. I live in the Pacific Northwest and watch them against the Dodgers earlier this season. And they have played, like, their record against teams that are above 500 has been one of the best. They lose the games that they shouldn't against the worst teams. But they play up against good teams. And I'm not saying Yankees are a great team, but anytime the Yankees come to town, they'll be in Seattle, regardless of how much the Yankees have struggled. I really believe that the Mariners just keep playing up against these teams that are the big names, the big stars, because they kind of have that chip on their shoulder. And remember how the year started off with their front office and, you know, a lot of the things that were said heading into the season. And I really feel like they've carried that into, like, we're going to just show everybody that we're, you know, we're a team that you can't mess with.
And the Yankees, I posted a piece this morning about where the Yankees stand and how, you know, at year's end, if it turns out that this year is a season in which they don't make the playoffs, that Hal Steinbrenner is going to have to make a choice about whether or not he believes in the vision of Brian Cashman, their general manager. And if you were to let him go, Jess, I think Brian would get a job within about 0.2 seconds. Like, he'd be hired so quickly. The Yankees have not had a losing season under him. And no matter what you think of this year's lineup, you know, construction and the right-handed nature of it and the, you know, the question of whether or not they have too many sluggers, that, you know, Brian will wind up landing someplace else. Specifically for the Yankees, obviously, a big question going into your game. When we get to the ninth inning, if the Yankees had a lead, Aroldis Chapman, will he get a save situation? My gut instinct, and I didn't do any reporting on this yesterday, is that they're going to give him some time to sort of sort things out. Give me some thoughts on the Yankees.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on Chapman. And I think that, especially if you're a team that's struggling, which the Yankees are, it's times out by 100 when you have a lead. I mean, I go back to last Wednesday against the Angels. Especially, I mean, there's been a few now for sure, but last Wednesday against the Angels, I mean, the Yankees score 7 runs against Shohei Ohtani in the first inning. He ends up coming out of the game. They have this massive lead. Aroldis Chapman comes in the ninth and the Angels score 7 runs in the ninth inning. I mean, Chapman walked the bases loaded, gave up a grand slam, ended up coming out. And just the blow that that does when you need wins more than anything. Your manager has called you out. You've got your owner calling you out. I mean, everything is just coming down. You've done everything that you need to do as a team, and then you can't finish it. And in like an exclamation point, it's not like you got a 1-run, 2-run lead you're just holding on to, but you're like, this game's won, and now you've lost. Like, that is a huge piece, not just to get Chapman right, but to get the team right. Is you, if you have a lead, you want to be able to put someone in there that can shut the door, especially heading into the All-Star break. I mean, we're now a week away from this break that, you know, you're going to want this team to feel good about the momentum they could possibly carry in these next 5 or 6 games.
All right, Jess. Well, have fun tonight.
Yeah, back-to-back games. Let's go.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. That feels nice to say to start a week. And I got to give you an update. we put the number of drinks at 22.5 Buster before the weekend started. And I was at dinner with my wife on Friday, and I told her about this, and she was appalled for a moment. And then I think she wanted in on the bit, so she was kind of driving the bus this weekend, got me over that 22.5 to 23. I kept track on my phone if you would like documentation. It was a good weekend. So just wanted to fill you in on that.
Wow. I don't know how you stand. I mean, my God.
Just having some fun. 4th of July is my favorite holiday. So, got to get in this.
I gathered. You've had a lot of favorite holidays this year.
Well, the big three, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, Christmas, Thanksgiving, they can hit bricks. But
well, this week, your favorite holiday will be Friday.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Reoccurring. That is indeed my favorite holiday. Any day that I am looking forward to not working or not working at all, that's probably a good day for me. Let's go to the tweets here. Schultz Baseball at Ben Schultz 12. With all this Kimbrel talk, trade talk, what caliber of prospect can the Cubs expect to get equal to Chapman Glaber trade?
The context is different, which means that I think the prospect return would be less. Now, Kimbrel has a club option, which makes him a little bit more attractive. But let's say that the Yankees return for Chapman, if you were to grade out it in an A, I think a B-plus type prospect, B-plus, A-minus type prospect, but not as good as what the Yankees got for Chapman, because the context at that time was, and you remember Theo Epstein, making that trade, believed that Chapman was the piece they needed to put them over the top to win the first World Series in, 108 years? Red Sox aren't quite that desperate. And I think other teams are not quite that desperate, so they won't get as much.
Next up, we have Brendan Devine at BDevine1715. Brendan writes in, what would happen if a team's only all-star rep were traded before the all-star game? Say Eduardo Escobar gets traded to whatever team. Would another player represent Arizona, or would Escobar represent Arizona while on another team's roster?
No, they wouldn't replace him with an Arizona player. This has happened before. I wish I could remember the players' names. A couple of instances I can remember in the past, and everyone just sort of moves on. And Escobar would take the field in the uniform of his new team.
Next up, we have Mr. Jakey RS at Jakey RS 79. Mr. Jakey writes in, hi, granted, I don't see a lot of East Coast games, call it my West Coast bias, but why is Aroldis Chapman an all-star? He's not the saves leader, not the lone Yankees rep, and he has a 4.71 ERA. So many other deserving players.
Yeah, keep in mind that the voting was done among players long before he had this total meltdown. We mentioned the stats. First 23 innings this year allowed one run. In the last 5 2/3 innings, he's allowed 14 runs. I bet you if you did a redo on the voting today, they probably would back off. Can you imagine, Taylor, anything more awkward than after Gerrit Cole and Aroldis Chapman blew that game, first game of the doubleheader on Sunday, coming in and being told, oh, yeah, by the way, you're an all-star. How awkward that would have been.
That is indeed very awkward. I love it. Everyone complains about all the Yankees talk on here, but I really like this collective meltdown they're having. Let's go to the last tweet of the day. Jalen Green, unsure there at Tiny Weapons. This person writes in, look, I know the Mariners are at least a year from relevance, but they swept the Rays in 4 and just took 2 of 3 from the White Sox and Blue Jays. Can we at least get a mention on the pod? What gives? Sincerely, a masochistic Mariners fan. We gave him some love today, Buster.
We did, Galen, and the truth be told, I had him scripted in that we were going to talk about him with Tim before I saw your tweet, but I appreciate that, and I hope we gave you something between Tim and between Jessica Mendoza.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter, and please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Jess, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.